This episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald, Mr. Four Verts, joins me to preview a great chock full slate of games in week 15. We get lost in the sauce with Rams, Lions, Packers, Broncos, and Bills, Patriots. Three good games to dive into. Also, we have a little bit of a slop watch, Philip Rivers associated slop watch in this one, plus an interesting Miami Dolphins team playing the Steelers. Then we cap off the show with some Hail Marys. Very fun, as always, with Chuck. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. We are previewing week 15 today. Got a nice slate of games to dive into as we get lost in the sauce with our three favorites, plus a couple of slop watch games at the end. Kind of cheaty, kind of slop watchy, kind of big dog of the week. It's kind of a little bit of a grab bag with those two games we're going to talk about, plus Hail Marys at the end to help me do that. As always, every single Thursday, my guy, Mr. Four Verts, Charles McDonald. How you doing today, Chuck? Good to see you.
Doing all right. Just it's December, man. You know, like you feel the holidays hitting you a little bit. You see the end of the regular season, but you got to focus, got it all in. And I hope everyone's having at least a somewhat relaxing time as we get down to the holidays. I know I'm definitely looking forward to getting back home and stuffing my face again. But first, we need to stuff our face with a little week 15 action, you know?
Yeah. A little nosh before you head home. You know, that's kind of how this feels. I know it's pretty good. As we get some clarity, a little bit of clarity on the playoff picture, you kind of can focus on which games are relevant. Even if don't know what the seeding is, and there are some live teams as well, especially in the AFC. But man, I think it's going to be fun. I know that's kind of how I feel though. Like I'm not traveling for the holidays, not doing any of that. So it's just like football, holidays. And then usually holidays to me means, oh, season's ending. And then we were just talking about before the show. And then it's like, oh yeah, season ends, it's playoffs. And then it's like Senior Bowl, Shrine Game, Combine. Yeah. It's just the new season starts as soon as this season starts winding down. So get ready for that, Dude. Buddy.
I'm already ready because I had a moment this past weekend where I had a bunch of friends over to watch the Big Ten title game. A couple of them were fans of a quarterback on an AFC North team. Been in the headlines a lot recently.
Yeah.
And we watched the game, right? And Mendoza in that game was incredible. Like the last 15 throws, he went 12 for 15 against the Avengers, cut them down. We were all in awe. They're sitting right next to me in awe of how good this guy is. And then the next day, now Mendoza asked, they got to pick a different position. They're not going to quarterback. I'm like, oh boy.
Okay.
It's December. Okay. We're starting this in December. You just watched that game with me yesterday, like 10 hours ago. And we're on his butt now. Okay.
Maybe you overserved them. Maybe you were too good of a host and you overserved them. They didn't remember. Maybe that's what it was. No, the goldfish brains definitely kind of crop in. I my favorite thing right now is doing, as I see more mock drafts and big boards come out, we've already done a few, is now some of those losing fan bases have started looking at the next draft class. And now we're getting some experts coming in. I mean that quote unquote experts coming in. How'd you have him going 12th? He was not going 12th. He's not going to last. It's like, oh my God, we're in December, guys. Let's chill until we get to March at least. And we actually really have a combine and stuff to actually react to some of this. But I already see a little bit of that creeping in, a little bit. But no, also the quarterback class is going to be interesting because we talked about it when we did the prospect show before Thanksgiving. And just talking about, like, I think the break-even point for a quarterback especially is if you're going to be a top 20, top 22 pick, just to declare. Because you'll make more money 4 years guaranteed, 5 years really, if the option's picked up, than you would just 1 year of NIL. But still, it seems like all the smoke is like, oh no, it's just Mendoza. And then who knows with Lenore Sellers? Who knows with Dante Moore? Who knows with Ty Simpson? Might be a barren quarterback class. crop up. I like Mendoza a ton. The QB one since May, but like after, I think Sellers should declare because I think after this process, he'd be a top 10 pick, like pretty easily. But no, who knows? They hired a coordinator. They hired a TCU guy. I think one of the Bryles.
Ken LeBryles.
Was it Bryles?
Ken LeBryles.
Yeah. Was it one of him? Yeah. One of those guys. I know. It's all the same to me. So we'll see. I God, just declare. Otherwise, these quarterback needy teams. Jacoby Brissett and some of these other guys are about to be the prettiest girls at the dance.
I really love it for him though. Bring back middle class.
I'm sure those guys
are to Ty Simpson. Say yes to Brissett. No to Simpson, yes to Brissett.
To Brissett. I always say yes to Brissett. I know. I watched a little bit of that game too. I love watching Jacoby. Did I ever tell you I hosted him in college?
Yes.
Like official visit. Very funny. Him and Nick O'Leary.
Woo, Nick O'Leary.
Yeah. They're high school teammates. Nick, there's zero chance Nick was coming. We beat Ohio State when they were ranked first, and he was wearing he was bundled up, and it was like October, and I was like, no way this guy's coming. Coming to Wisconsin. Florida boy all the way. But Jacoby was so cool and was such a good dude even then. And then I saw him, didn't see him again for 5 years, maybe longer. And I was with the Falcons and he was at his pro day and I went to watch it at NC State. And he remembered me. He, as soon as he finished throwing, he walks up. He's like, "Nate, how you doing?" And I was like, "I am a fan of you for my life." The fact you remember that from 5 years ago, and I didn't even show you that good of a time because you didn't commit. So,
no, but when you're 18, you remember the going to those college campuses for sure. When you're in high
you
school.
Do
definitely remember those
visits. I remember Kyle Israel, my host. I don't remember UCF. Some of them. I know Blake's. Yeah, in my Montana visit, it's a little hazy. Jacoby played. Point guard too, like he was gonna be a basketball football guy. Anyways, that's my way of talking about the Cardinals today because I haven't talked about them in 2 months, and producer Stone was really happy about that, I'm sure. But we'll start with getting lost in the sauce. I think it was pretty easy to pick kind of the three highlighted games. There's a couple other interesting ones we'll get to at the end of the show, but we'll start. These are three favorite games. We'll start with an AFC East battle. We got the Bills at the Patriots. Even though the Patriots are on top of the AFC East and up there in the AFC, they are underdogs at home hosting the Bills. 1-point underdogs, so basically an even matchup. This is going to be, I think, a very, 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 very fun one. But we'll start, because we're getting lost in the sauce in this one. When the Bills have the ball against this Patriots defense, Charles, when you were analyzing, previewing, breaking down this game, what stood out to you?
I can't get over the feeling that this could be a monster game for Buffalo, offensively at least, because I don't know if I'm off on my read on the Patriots defense, but they seem like a defense that as the season's gone on, like kind of similar to where Denver's was last year, where, you know, not as good as Denver's was last year, but in the sense that, you know, solid defense, they've had a lot of quality performances, but when the big boys came up to play, they got absolutely dumped on. And I think if you're Buffalo, you probably just want to keep doing what you've been doing and just pound the rock. Like, I do think that Joe Brady has had his struggles, where you see him get into sometimes repetitive play calls, like him calling mesh on third down has become kind of a meme on the internet. But there are some merits to winning, to playing like that. Like, because he does get in the stretches where he's like, oh yeah, my quarterback's 250 pounds, my offensive line, they're all like 330, and we have a really good running back too, so let's just pound the rock. So like this year, they're second in the success rate on rushing attempts. Patriots defense is about below average, but I think where this could kind of be a big point of winning for Buffalo is if they can just get into the red zone, because the Patriots, they have the worst red zone defense in the league this year, especially when teams are in 11 personnel, which the Bills do run out of 11 personnel pretty well. So just like they do have every formation. But interesting enough, like when I was listening, getting through the numbers, a lot of the numbers, they kind of detail that New England, they might get stomped on the ground. But interestingly enough, like when they go big and when they go like to 11, 12 personnel and offenses play that, that's kind of where they've been at their best in terms of defending the run. So maybe Buffalo, you try and spread them out and make them run a little bit. But either way, just a healthy, heavy dose of run game, and then let Josh Allen do whatever the hell he wants on the back end, because I saw him throw a touchdown in the snow that I would gasp if people did it when it was clear skies. So he just kind of seems to be on a different level when it comes to some of the playmaking ability. So if you can just pound the rock and keep it steady, I think there's a path to a lot of points here.
You had a little snippet there that's exactly kind of the thread I pulled at when you said when they get big or when they're in sub or something. So when I say sub, that means five DBs or more, or nickel and dime, substitute personnel, because that used to be the substitute personnel, but now everyone bases out of nickel. Nickel's the new base. Correct.
Correct.
There's about five people that will get that joke. But, I know you will. But I looked at this because the Bills, it's cool. I actually talked with Matt about this earlier this week, was the Bills have all their tight ends that they can use now that Dalton Kincaid's back. You have Dawson Knox, Dalton Kincaid, Jackson Hobbs. You can get Reggie Gilliam out there, who's like a fullback tight end hybrid. And so they can get to that, but they also can get to a lot of, you know, different receiver looks is how I'll put it. They have a bunch of kind of okay players, you know, but they do more scrappy, dirty work in this receiver room. Yeah. Khalil Shakir, Gabe Davis, even Keon Coleman when he's out there, Joshua Palmer when he's out there. So I kind of was just like, all right, what do you guys prefer? Like, what is the way that you guys are going to attack this defense? And there are some interesting splits here, I guess, this Patriots defense. First off, the Patriots defense was really good against the run for a while. Milton Williams got hurt. And it's kind of tapered off just a little bit since week 9. Milton Williams got hurt, I think, week 11. Since week 9, though, the Patriots defense is 29th in EPA per rush allowed, 25th in rushing success rate allowed. They play the Falcons, Bucks, Jets, Bengals, and Giants. It's kind of a mix of run games there, and 27th in rushing success rate allowed against under center runs, which is important against this Bills offense that's been going even more under center the last couple weeks as it's gotten colder, which I think is also interesting too. But having said all that, I looked, Patriots defense on early downs, so first and second down, out of sub, and they usually are in nickel, not dime, but they'll do some dime, 25th in success rate, 9th in rushing success rate, but 31st in passing success rate, 22nd in EPA per play, 25th in EPA per pass, 25th in explosive pass rate. And when they are out of sub just overall, they're 16th in rushing success rate, 20th in EPA per rush. So this is, I think it's a sub, you know, an 11 personnel type of day for the Bills, even though I've talked endlessly about how their tight ends and how they do that, because it makes sense. You can target them in certain ways. You can get their linebackers on islands. They become a little bit more basic even when they're in sub, just on early downs.
Yeah.
It's like cover one, cover three, quarters, a little bit of cover two. And when they're in quarters, they're really gettable. They've allowed the most EPA to tight ends when they're in quarters, which makes sense. It's kind of just like, because in quarters, you're just going to get the slot on an island and you'll get one of the linebackers on an island. And if you have a decent linebacker, you can kind of win against this team. So I just said all that. Oh, they're not going to use a lot of tight ends, but they can target the tight end when they're in sub personnel, if that makes sense. But I agree with you. I think the Bills offense, which is the most explosive offense in the NFL right now, first in explosive player rate, I think they just have what we always say, a lot of natural answers against this Patriots defense. They kind of can align how they can get to what they want to do against this Patriots defense.
Yeah. And I think what kind of where I get like hold up on the Patriots defense sometimes, especially like in this matchup, is not the fastest back seven out there. Like Spillane has had his moments. Christian Ellis against the Giants was, you know, I'm a fan of physical football, but if you were a Giants fan, a little ticked off by that, I kind of get that too. Cause he was really pushing the limits, but you know,
he was right on the edge, man.
Yeah. Once it got to like 3 in the first half, I was like, all right, pal, come on. We're trying to get out this game alive, you know? but I still think they're gettable on the back end. Like this is the part of the team to me where, and I guess there's more spots, but like you top these teams that like you go from top 5 picks where they were last year to, you know, 11-2 so fast. I still don't really see people talking about them as like a legit Super Bowl contender. And I think some of the holes you see on defense are going to be exploitable. And I just don't really know like which one of these players I'm supposed to count on to, you know, be that hammer against the run that's going to consistently stop them all game long. Right. Barmore's a good player. But you know the rest of the defense, especially since Milton Williams out, they're just kind of like okay from a talent perspective. So still working on that side of the ball, and I think Buffalo can, you know, for their sake at least, kind of get the win here, because if they don't, New England clinches the division and they move on to a lock in the first round, and you're going on the road in the first round. So this is a massive, massive, massive game for Buffalo.
It really is. They really need this, especially how they're going to do. And I just think just how the AFC is too. And that's what'd you say about the Patriots? I've been trying to figure out. I've spent, I feel like, five shows now, even Matt made fun of me about it, about just like talking about the AFC playoffs and just like how I would stack these teams. And that's the thing about the Patriots is that, we'll talk about their offense, might as well just segue to there, is that, yes, I believe Drake May is playing some of the best football in the NFL right now, I guess the world, you could say, yeah. And is deservedly on the podium for, you know, the MVP discussions. But there's just so much of the rest of the team I don't think is a true strength. Like, I'm not saying bad, which I think is what, you know, I think whenever you say something's not good, everyone goes, oh, so you think they're awful. It's like, it's just more like the run game is their run game. Their offensive run game is just inconsistent. Now you have offensive linemen down. Will Campbell is on IR, yep. Their left tackle. And then on defense, it's, yeah, they can stop the run, but it's against certain looks. Like, they're out of base, they can really stop the run. But then now I just mentioned those substats, and they're just more middling. Okay, that's one thing that if you get to the playoffs, a team that can get into sub and do stuff, like the Bills, now they have an angle of attack. They have a way, they have a path, they have a game plan that they can get to. It's not like they really have to work at it. Like, they can just naturally find this. This is me and you, what, spending an hour or two researching, watching film on this game, and we figure this out right away. You know, so now imagine these coaches that are in the lab the whole week for a whole season of film, they're going to find these pickable things. So that's why I have no idea how to, like, I think Drake May is incredible, and I get that. But once you get to the playoffs, it's like just having an incredible quarterback isn't enough. You do need the help. They have awesome special teams. I'll give them that. you know, that's another strength that they have. But like, out of base, okay, they're fourth in success rate out of base. Okay, I'm not just going to, I'll keep you out of base then. Like, you know, if I'm an offense, I'll just say, all right, I'll just make you put your light bodies on there, and I'll just go that way. It's that's why I kind of just struggle to see how high I rank them, but it's just because of the lack of kind of other true strengths. Let's just get to the Patriots offense. Also on this side, by the way, Spencer Brown, right tackle. I believe he said he's going to try and play this week, which would be huge for the Bills, who have, I mean, they were out both tackles against the Steelers, and you would have never known because they just ran all over them a couple weeks ago. So, but going against the other side of the ball, Patriots offense, Bills defense, Joey Bosa practice on Wednesday, limited. Terrell Bernard, linebacker, limited practice on Wednesday. Again, Will Campbell, the left tackle, is out for the Patriots. What do you think about this side of the ball? I think they're, I've been trying to figure out this Bills defense because I cannot get a grasp of what they are right now.
Yeah, it's like they're to me this season for the Bills defense, I feel kind of vindicated in my support of Sean McDermott over the years because I'm like, man, this guy's a good coach. Sometimes it just doesn't click, like, personnel-wise. But yeah. I still feel that way about this defense. But, like, to me, they're overperforming the talent that they have. Because I still look at this group and I still look at this group and I'm like, oh, man, this is not the most frightening cast of defenders. Like, even if you throw Joey Bosa in there, and he's been, I think he's been more effective than I expected this year when he's been healthy. Cause I just thought, man, like, that's a lot of injuries, bro. Like, you might just be cooked. So if he's going to play this week, that's huge. But, it seems like Tre'Davious White's playing on this team, you know, and they're just average.
They're like Darnell Savage.
They've had games where they've been like straight up good against the pass, you know, stretches where they've been like kind of average, but the fact that they're even there is pretty impressive. So, I think that, you know, Missouri's done a good job kind of hiding some of the talent, but unfortunately you're playing like maybe the most talented quarterback in the NFL right now, Drake May. And the throw that he hit, man, I forget, I don't even remember what team they were playing a couple of weeks ago, but it was just like in the middle of the field under pressure versus cover two and just hit like a crosser right behind like the sinking Tampa player. While he was under pressure, I was like, wow, like there's like no one who can do that. While also not getting his super kill, like slid him straight to the ground. And it's just like, man, there's just not many guys like really in the history of the game that can do stuff like that. So even though like I think this Bills defense is overperforming you know, expectations, especially like when you look at their pass rush over the past month, they've gotten three sacks since week 10, 25% pressure rate. The fact that like their total output comes out to be about an average pass defense is pretty impressive, but that's a bad strategy when you're playing against someone this good. Like even though guys like Kayshon Booty have stepped up this year, you can still look at that supporting cast and say, wow, there's still a whole lot of room to get better and get more dangerous, more explosive, like on the outside, but they're still here with one of the best passing offenses in the league. And that's basically all to the quarterback. So good luck, man. Like sometimes there are guys who are just so good that it doesn't really matter what you throw at them. And I think Drake May is probably in that sphere, even though I do think the Bills have done a good job trying to patchwork this defense on the fly this year.
Yeah, he's, I know, he finds answers really, like he does a really good job. Like he's, I always thought he was underrated in college about how sharp he was just because the offenses he played in. I mean, he was playing for Phil Longo for a year and then the second year coordinator, I'm trying to remember who it was at Carolina, but his eyes were always going to the right spot. Like he would miss a couple throws, but it was like, it wasn't bad process. And that's why I was so encouraged by him as a prospect. But I mean, my favorite prospect since Andrew Luck. You know, my favorite quarterback prospects is Andrew Luck. And then it's been even more of a revelation as a pro is that his eyes always go to the right spot. How he paces his throws. I think that's the best way I could put it. Like, he's got a great arm, but he knows how to just, like, take some RPMs, MPHs off and just know how to, like, kind of, I'm not even just saying, like, dink a throw over or put, like, you know, loop a throw over, which he can do. But just even when he throws line drives, he can throw almost like a cutter, you know, in baseball. Like a, he just has like an off speed pitch to it, which I think is just tremendous because he's such a good ball, a deep, good deep ball thrower. I'm trying to, you know, the Patriots offense to me, it's like he makes the most of what they got. It's going to be, I fear for any time they have to face in the playoffs, like a good pass rush. Like if they have to play the Texans, that could be just an interesting matchup, I think, for them. I think they have a lot of fine and solid receivers, but like you said, there's not that true number one needle mover. Booty's been playing well. Hunter Henry and Austin Hooper have played well at tight end. They're not outright excellent, but they're solid starting quality NFL players. Same with Diggs. Kyle Williams is coming along. He caught a touchdown against the Giants. That gives him a little bit more juice. And you know, Pop Douglas has his stuff, his juice stuff, and yada yada. And Robin Lopez, as I like to call Matt Collins, doing his dirty work stuff. But what I'm looking at this matchup is like, I've been just trying to figure out the Bills because beginning of the year, the last couple of years, they're always nickel. We're nickel no matter what you do. Nickel five DBs, every single snap. And then this year, they've been toying around with base. They've been doing nickel. They've been doing dime. And some of that's injuries, but also some of it, I think, is just a philosophy change. And the first time these two teams played, they're base, and this is just early downs. The Bills were in base 40% of the time, nickel 57% of the time, almost a 50-50 split. Last week, Terrell Bernard was hurt. They were in base 0% of the time, nickel 84%, dime 16%. So all sub. Then week 13, which was 2 weeks ago, Terrell Bernard was hurt. They were in base 40% of the time and nickel 60% of the time. So it's a very game plan specific thing, but they also, when they are just like the Patriots, I'm kind of continue kind of like the same point I had about the Patriots defense, the Bills defense in base on early downs, second in success rate allowed, first in passing success rate allowed, second in EPA per play. So they're good. When you get them in sub on early downs, 19th in EPA per play, 21st in success rate allowed, 25th in rushing success rate allowed, 15th in passing success rate allowed. So again, just like we're talking about the Patriots defense, there's just easy splits. These are the same thing coaches look at. So they have just stuff that you can pick at. And I'm curious, like, just how they go against this offense that can go in 12, or do the Patriots try and live in 11 personnel with just one tight end? I'm just curious. It's more of a questions kind of thing than like a definitive statement I have about either of these teams, because I think they're both kind of, or units, because they're both kind of flawed, but they have good aspects to them. So I'm just, maybe a lot of 11 personnel in this game, a lot of receivers in this game, even though there's been a lot of talk about tight ends this year, especially with these teams.
I guess I just kind of get stuck on like which player am I supposed to be scared of if I'm Drake May? Like who would I not think that I could throw it around in this game?
Benford's pretty good. But there's not like a lot of like where I'm like, I can't throw it to the slot. Like I can't throw deep because the safety might. No, there's none of really that. I agree with
that. Yeah, it's like I see Jordan Poirier and Tre'Davious White with the combined 70 years of age out there. You know, like I'm actually combined 70 years of age. It's just frustrating. Like I really do hope that Buffalo can kind of get back into just getting more talented players out there. And I understand, like, you go through a rut sometimes. We know that they retooled, but then you realize your floor is still so high because Josh Allen's your quarterback and the offensive line's good. So, I'm with you. Benford has had a great season this year. He's been a stud. I still think he needs to change his jersey number, get that one right.
Has to.
But outside of those, like, that's one of five. It's like O-line, you know?
Right.
All right. Like, Andrew Thomas is good. Right. What about the rest of them?
And like, and Teron Johnson was good, their slot, but he's kind of like, I think, tapered off a little bit too. And I always thought more of a good box player. Yeah. I mean, he's not that big. And that's why I was always amazed he was able to play so many snaps, because he wasn't that big. It's not like Kyle Hamilton playing in the slot, or Brian Branch got hurt, or Brian Branch playing in the slot, you know, like, he's not that big. So I'm with you. I think that's a good way to put it. Like, who scares you on this defense? Like, who, if Joey Bosa's not out there, do I even need a chip help? You know, like, all right, well, okay, is there one side of the ball I'm worried about? Is there a one-on-one I'm not taking? You know, Benford, maybe. Deion Walker's been playing a good amount, by the way. You're a Kentucky guy who is absolutely ginormous.
Just needs someone to light a fire in his ass.
He's had some moments. He's actually been doing okay. I know, they need it. But I know, I don't know how to feel about it. Like, I actually feel a lot better about the Bills because I feel lesser about the AFC as a whole. But it's just, when I look at this defense, I'm like, what are you guys? Like, because I truly have more questions than any, like, real, like, statement to make about them. But Drake May is really good. I think that's really that's the most fun. It's more like a Drake May versus Sean McDermott battle. That's what this kind of feels like. And Josh McDaniels, I'll throw your name in there too. All right, predictions. Patriots are 1-point underdogs at home.
Oh, damn. Feels about right. I mean, I think I'm going to go with Buffalo, and like, they do feel obviously feel close, mostly because of the presence of Drake May. Like, if I was just looking at, if I was just pulling the teams apart, I think I'd rather just take Buffalo's offense. If I was taking the quarterbacks away from the teams, I'd probably just go Buffalo's offense is the overall best unit. So I'm going to roll with them. And I'm also going to say the cliche, it's really hard to beat a really good team two times in the same season, and Buffalo gets it done.
I mean, that's not, it's a very true cliche. It's been that once you get to playoffs, it's three times. It's hard. I'm going with the Bills too. And then just the classic adage, which kind of has gotten me in trouble this year, mostly talking about the Chiefs, but Bills kind of need it more in a sense. Patriots are coming off a bye. I should say that. They are coming off a bye. But the Bills kind of just need this. Like, I just feel like they're more geared up for this, while the Patriots, it's more of a get through this week, maybe pull out a win, but get healthy. And then now we fully formed for the playoff push and then the playoff run, where they maybe just get caught this week. Still, God, it's going to be fun to watch. I like watching Drake May play football. I don't know about anybody else, but I really, really enjoy watching him play football. And it's I'm excited to watch him and Josh Allen in this game, because, I mean, these are two freaking dragons going at it, man. It's pretty cool to watch when you two awesome quarterbacks in not awful situations kind of going at it. So pretty cool stuff in this game. All right. We'll take our first break, and then we're going to come back with a few more games that we get lost in the sauce with. All right. See you guys in a sec. We are back, and this is the Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford Bowl, that infamous trade that really had repercussions in the NFL. They have played each other since then, but still, Lions at Rams. Rams are 6-point favorites at home. Not that, I mean, the Lions have faced a lot of injuries, but this, I think, speaks more to just how freaking good the Rams are, how complete the Rams are right now. But still, it's going to be a fun battle in the NFC. We'll start with when the Lions, the road team, have the ball going against this Rams defense. Fun Styles Makes Fight matchup here. Both defenses are really different and funky as well, which I think is really cool. You have the Rams with their funkiness on the back end, a lot of dime, a lot of DBs, and then the Lions will have to just punch you in the mouth, play man coverage, single high, love to run base with only four DBs out there. So we're going to start with the Lions have the ball against that Rams dime heavy defense. What are you focusing on this game, Chuck?
Well, I think what's kind of interesting about this game going into this week, like, you have five games now where Dan Campbell has been the play caller because he took over after that. When they lost to the Vikings, and look, I get you lose to JJ McCarthy and how he's been this year. I get you got to take some control back then. You got to. So since then, since like that week 9-10 stretch, they've still been one of the best offenses in the league. In fact, they've kind of improved on a couple things that they've done. Like, they're EPA per dropback has gone up. Their first EPA per dropback since week 9, since Dan Campbell took over play calling. Their fifth explosive play rate. I mean, it's still a really strong passing game. And the Rams passing game, or pass defense, has kind of fallen off a little bit, because over the first 8 weeks of the season, they were probably the best pass defense in the league, like number one EPA per dropback, high success rate. But since then, they've been about middle of the pack. And I guess I found that kind of interesting, because I think that this Rams defense, like, to a degree, for the past 2 years, really, they've kind of been punching above their weight a little bit.
Oh yeah.
And I watched Nate Landman play in Atlanta, and it's not like to denigrate him or what he's accomplished this year, but there are spots where you can look at the personnel and say, oh, you know, like, this is a quality defense, but we feel like our guys can have success at certain spots. So one area that I think the Lions should be able to have success is just like throwing the ball, because it seems like they just have a lot of speed that maybe the Lions or the Rams won't be able to keep up with. So maybe this could be another spot where Jameson Williams has a big play, and you just kind of get to see like just the pure speed in the afterburners in the open space, because that Rams pass defense, like, their efficiency slowly ticking down over the past month of football. And I think they've kind of gotten to a point where the players are who they are, for lack of a better term. I mean, Emmanuel Forbes had a nice start to the season, and then, you know,
right,
kind of turned back into Emmanuel Forbes over the past
He's like one third pumpkin.
Half pumpkin.
Yeah, like, one third pumpkin. Not all pumpkin there, but he's turning orange again.
Yeah, and also, like, an underrated trend for like this Rams defense that I think is alarming is their pass rush is like falling off of a cliff. Like since week 9,
noticed that too.
In that same span of games, their pass rush has gone from like top 5 to bottom 7 in terms of pressure to sack rate and sack rate. 4.7 sack rate since week 9.
Interesting.
Or that's 25th in the league. That's like, that's never going to cut it against this offense. Like, the one thing that you got to do to beat this offense is get pressure. Like, we've seen, if you get pressure, like, you can make Jared Goff do anything. He'll fold immediately. But if you're not going to get pressure, now you're kind of in danger, because through all the faults that, like, we've talked about Goff over the years, if you give him time, he can absolutely shred you.
He'll shred you. Yeah, he's the best 7-on-7 quarterback in the NFL.
Like, that's a perfect way to put it. Like, and I mean as a compliment. If you can keep him clean, you're going to score a whole lot of points.
Totally.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of like a poison spot for the Rams. Like, the passing game. Like, can you get to Jared Goff enough? Are your players like just talented enough to kind of keep up with all the weapons that Detroit has? Because like Dan Campbell seamlessly, they had some hiccups along the way, but overall, like, this offense has still been really good with him calling the plays. Had that weird little bit where, you know, Frank Ragnow thing, which maybe we'll talk about later with the Philip Rivers stuff. Like, guys, we gotta get a grip here. You know, just because you lose a game and things are looking tough, you don't have to go do something crazy. But I do think Dan's done a really good job. And just with kind of the personnel limitations with the Rams defense starting to show their cracks recently, I think there's opportunity for another big day there.
The one thing, and I do think this Rams defense, it's where I agree with you, they punch above their weight. They rank highly, like even DVOA, they're top 5 and everything, top 4 really and everything. I think it's kind of more in between. Like I don't watch them and go like, holy, like if this is fair or not. Eye test is a little different for me with them than say when I watch the Texans. And I'm like, yeah, that's the best defense in the NFL. Like, you know, like, because of how they play and who the talent is and the personnel. It's more of a, award. Yeah. Or the Vikings. Yes. But it's like, I want to give like an acknowledgement to how good of a job Chris Shula is doing, because it's just like, he's making the most of these guys. Like, I didn't think Emmanuel Forbes is playable. The fact that he got half a season where he was looking actually good, not even just like, not like a total weakness, that's a tip of the cap to the scheme and everything. I have noticed over the last couple of weeks, so I do agree with you on here, where it's more like they feel like more like, you know, like the 10th-ish best pass defense. You know, like, I don't know if that's fair or not, but I noticed a couple teams really getting them with like kind of stack and motions and like double in breakers because of how they play coverage and how they like love to have like quarter shells over everything and get funky on the front end. And because of that, you can kind of manipulate their leverage. And why I'm bringing that up, this is the Lions are the kings at getting in breakers. at daggers and benders and getting stuff out of stack and then motioning to it. Oh, how many Amon-Ra St. Brown crossing routes have you guys seen in the last couple of years? How many Jameson Williams crossing routes have you seen over the last couple of years? They're not a go ball team. They don't, that Jared Goff is not a good go ball thrower, but he can rip the shit out of stuff between the numbers. He wants to throw those benders and digs. That's why they call them all the time. So that's kind of one of those, again, natural answers. That's what the Lions like to do. And the Rams, you have to manipulate them, though. You can't just line up and do it. But if you have some thought to your, and really the 49ers game is the one that comes to my mind, the most recent time they play the 49ers. The 49ers were able to kind of manipulate some of the stuff and some of the releases, how they got to them. And I was like, okay, that's interesting to me because that's on film now. And I've kind of just have really focused on that. So I even looked, the Rams against in routes, and crossing routes. And so crossing routes can be are defined as overs as well, or over routes are defined as crossing routes as well. Again, I wish I could go back 15 years when they labeled all this stuff and when the data started with all these websites and everything to explain the differences of these routes and everything. But we move on. We live. The Rams are 11th in passing success rate against those routes. And I'm like, that kind of feels right. And they're kind of middle of the pack. They're actually pretty good with explosives, but you can get them. And that's why I just am focusing on that, because again, this is where I think that the Lions are so good at that. This is what Goff likes to throw. Get a little Jameson Williams is faster than, you know, maybe Emmanuel Forbes matches up okay against Jameson Williams because size wise, he doesn't have to worry about like getting outpowered, but like Amon-Ra St. Brown would have a huge advantage over these guys, about how they play too. So I just think a lot of those inbreaker stuff in between the numbers, like really the seams, look for a lot of throws in the seams. I think that's how you kind of have to get to this defense. It's easier said than done, but you can do it. The other thing is targets out of the backfield. I don't think the Lions run game success rate wise is bottom 10. And with the interior offensive line injuries, I don't think it'll improve much. It has to rely on explosives from Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery a little bit, but targets out of the backfield, Jahmyr Gibbs, the Rams are 16th in explosive play rate, 17th in EPA per pass against targets out of the backfield. So maybe some Jahmyr Gibbs choice routes. You just talked about the linebackers for the Rams. That's another thing too, that is that like, okay, they are the true weakness of this defense, even if they are playing well, Omar Spites and all these guys. But maybe that's how you pick on them. You get Gibbs lined up one-on-one with them, run along choice routes, stuff out of the backfield. And that's how you create explosives as well. And then for the Rams side, just look where Jared Verse is lined up. I think they're going to, it's going to be a hunt the fish type of game. Verse is going to line up, you know, Mahogany might play. I saw that. I think he might be practicing again. But I think you'll see Verse on the interior and passing downs. So I think look for that and look for a lot of screens and running the ball from the Lions on third down. Okay, yeah. You guys are going to get funky. All right, we're just going to run it on you guys. Like, screw absolutely. This. We'll just run it on you guys. It's a really fun Styles Mix fights matchup on this side of the ball. I'm really excited to watch this side of the ball.
Yeah, and I think one other thing is one other thing that I noticed when I was kind of sifting through it, some of the data was, it seems like Dan Campbell has made an emphasis on fixing like their problems, but maybe that they had playing big before he took over as a play caller. Because since week 10, the Lions are, if you cut it down to sets where they have no more than two receivers on the field, so like 21 personnel, mm-hmm. 12 personnel, some of your heavier packages. Since week 10, they're averaging 7.4 yards per play on their, you know, sets where they got two receivers on the field. 47% success rate, 56% success rate on offensive dropbacks, almost a 20% explosive play rate first in the league. 40% of their plays are going for a first down, and they have zero sacks allowed. And they're 83% third down conversion rate in their heavier sets too.
You said 20% explosive play rate?
19.2%. So
that's absurd. That's like, yeah, it's insanely high.
The Rams on the other side, and teams have gotten big on them over the past month. It's been below average, but they're, you know, in the bottom 10 success rate in offensive dropbacks, bottom 10 percent of plays for a first down. And, you know, they have gotten very little negative plays when teams are kind of get big with them and pull the receivers off the field, which makes sense. Like, if you're going to be a defense that plays dime, the obvious, fix of that is to get big and just try to run you over.
Yep.
And the Rams dime, like, that can get really small at times. So even like guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, could have a size advantage over some of their DBs, like, blocking on the outside. So
yeah,
I think that Dan could just say, you know what? We've been working on this since I became the play caller. They've gone from like middle of the pack to basically first in the league over the time Dan took over in some of their, in terms of like their, how they play big and their bigger sets. Mm-hmm. So maybe you just try and mow them down and keep Stafford off the field. But also the problem is they get too many explosive plays. So if you're going to score touchdowns, that Rams offense is still going to be on the field too, which might end up being a problem.
Right. I looked it up too. The Lions have only played against their offense, has only played against 13 snaps of dime personnel this season, because a lot of defenses are going like, no way, on early downs, on first and second down. Because a lot of defenses go, nope. we're not letting you bully us. So that's a great point, because that's a natural answer. All right, you want to get light? We'll just get huge and just run you over. And the fact that they can do it, I mean, it is the Lions. It's like their whole basis of their personality. So I hope they can do it. And again, the Rams defense, Puna Ford has helped a lot, but you know, Braden Fisk and Verse and Byron Young, all good players. Kobe Turner as well, but they are lighter. Turner's pretty big, but Verse is strong, but he can get a little nosy and leave some edges open. And then on top of it, Fisk has to win on, you know, win instantly, or has to win on slants and games. So again, if you want to play against a defense that slants and games, you just run them over, steamroll. So it's almost a keep it simple, stupid kind of offensive game plan for the Lions, which I think Dan Campbell's like, hell yeah. Let's do this. Also, the anniversary of when I thought Dan Campbell would be a good coach. His first year when they played the Rams, and the Rams were rolling. They had a whole bunch of backups playing DB, like undrafted free agents and all that. And like how he was coaching them up, and they're running all these trick plays and all this stuff, and how he coached them up. I was like, I think this coach is going to be really good. Like, they were getting blown out. They lost by like 40. But I was like, I think Dan Campbell's going to be really good, because he's getting these guys playing really hard. So that's just exactly what he does. All right, other side of the ball. Rams offense, Lions defense. Brian Branch, another casualty of this Lions defense, now on IR with an Achilles injury. And that matters a lot, because I've stated before, this Lions defense loves to play base with four DBs. And a part of the reason why they can do that, on top of having good linebackers and a good front, is that Brian Branch could technically cover the third receiver from the safety spot. So they weren't worried about going base to sub. So that is curious, going against a Rams offense that can go 13 personnel, three tight ends, they can go 11, and they can go 12, and they could do it all extremely well. So it's kind of a, what do the Rams decide to do? Are they going to go 13? Yeah. They're the base. Okay, you're down DBs. Are we going to go 11? But I got a few other threads to pull out, but I'm curious what threads you pulled on this side of the ball, Chuck.
The kind of pick up where we left off. Man, the Rams, if the Lions defense over the past month, or Lions offense over the past month, has been like maybe the best in the NFL at playing in those heavier sets, the Rams are just behind them at number two. They're actually first in total successful play rate on offense over the past month, with no more than two receivers on the field. Stafford has a 57% dropback success rate in those sets.
Yeah.
Oh man, and I mean, just like the Lions is just
57%.
57%, and the Lions are allowing 54% dropback success rate. Man, like this is the area of the game where maybe you're looking confused, like the spread, and then you see how like some of the numbers stack up, and you look at the film and be like, oh man, like unless Stafford like just doesn't show up to the game, like literally doesn't show up to the game, they're probably going to score like 40 points again. I just don't really see where the answer is going to come from Detroit, because like you said, they're banged up. And then when you just start like filtering through the numbers and looking at the film, it's just one of those games where it looks like such another severe advantage for the Rams offense. But like, that makes sense though, because that's what it's been for basically the entire season for them. Like, even in that game against Carolina where they had the turnover implosion, it's not like they weren't moving the ball, you know? That was not their problem in that game. They scored 45 against the Cardinals, 34 against the Bucks a couple weeks ago.
They had like a 70% rushing success rate in that game.
Dude, they've scored at least 30 points in every game since they played the Jaguars outside of the Seahawks win, where they scored 21, and then last week against the Panthers, they scored 28. Other than that, you're looking at 45, 34, 42, 34, 35. I mean, they're not keeping up with that. And I think like kind of the simple answer is Detroit's also just kind of, once again, a little bit too banged up at this point in the season to handle it. But even if they were healthy, this is just one of those juggernaut units that they don't really have any flaws. But I think if they want to get big, that is a big problem for Detroit's offense right now, or Detroit's defense right now.
Yes.
Over the past month,
yep,
with two receivers on the field, Detroit is giving up 9.6 net yards per pass attempt. Good luck.
It's because they're like, especially when the personnel goes down, it's because they're pretty simplistic. Like if I'm in this formation on this down or in this personnel grouping, I can kind of limit what the lines are going to do. And it works when you have dudes or you went on the pass rush and it's like, oh, we can't get the ball off, or this guy gets his ass kicked in man coverage. But if you're not making plays, and I know, all right, if I'm in big personnel, base personnel on offense, all right, you're going to match with base defense, lines defense. All right, look for this cover three look that they do. They do this like cover three robber look where the safety kind of lurks in the middle. Kirby Joseph got a bunch of picks off it last year. He might be playing. But on those looks, if you have a quarterback that knows what he's doing and two valid receivers like the Lions or like the Rams have, it's just easy. You just hit inbreakers. You just hit what they call glance routes, which is like an extended slant. You just hit those routes and it's all day. Like those are 15 yards a pop if you can just get it out on time. So that's where, again, it's like, all right, what do you want to do? This Rams offense, they can go big, they can go small, they can go in between, they can run, they can throw, they can do play action, they can go under center, they can go shotgun, they can go pistol, they can go play, they can bootleg, they can drop back, like they can run zone runs, they can run duo runs, they can pull guys. Like that's why they're the best team in the NFL. It's just because on offense, they can literally do anything. They match up well against anybody as long as they just don't have stupid turnovers in Carolina. I looked it up. And again, because Brian Branch is gone or is out, that makes me think that the Lions will stick even more to base personnel. And the Rams versus base, everything you just said, their first in success rate overall this season, 49.8% overall success rate against base defenses this year. 50% of their plays are successful. That's absolutely absurd. First in rushing success rate, again, absurd, 46.6%. Third in passing success rate, 56%. Third in EP per play, fourth in EP per rush, sixth in EP per drop back. They go bonkers. It just doesn't matter what you do. They're going to find an answer, and Stafford's going to find an answer. And I also looked, like look at target shares against coverages or against like base sub and all that. The Rams target share against base defenses. Devontae Adams, 46.5%. Puka Nacua, 41.7%. So that means nearly 90% of the targets with your base defense are going to go to one of their two receivers. And if you're going to run cover three and man, like the Lions want to do, well, one of them is going to win. Devontae Adams against base this year, 25.6% first downs per route run. Like anything over 10% is great. 2.33 yards per route run. Puka Nacua, 33% first downs per route run, 5.13 yards per route. It's, again, they just have natural answers. I even looked up man coverage stats, you know, maybe for later downs, because the Lions, again, are going to live in, they'd like to play man coverage. We'll see in this game if they do. They kind of dance with the one that brought them. That's kind of how the Lions play. Rams target share versus man. This is why I liked the Devontae Adams signing, because I thought he would be the man beater. And he's been good. 13.7% first downs per route run. He gets targeted about 31% of the time. But Puka Nacua, it opens up Nacua. And it opens up Nacua in the slot, because now you have Devontae on the outside. Nacua against man coverage this year, 21% of his routes, he's earned a first down. Again, anything over 10% is really good. And he's at 21%, 3.83 yards per route run against man coverage this year. And it's just, that's, again, this offense has so many answers to what you want to do. And I think they'll have answers against whatever the Lions want to do. Even run game wise, they can pull guys. And that's the way you get after this Lions run defense. So yeah, it's the beauty of this Rams offense. They put you in binds. And I think the Lions have a lot of ways that they can get in binds, sadly enough, because of just injuries.
I just don't know really what you're supposed to do here if you're the Lions. I don't know. Like, I really don't know. It's just a tough spot to be in.
I don't know. That's the thing. Yeah, I know. Just run quarters. It's like what I do in Madden. Just run quarters every play.
Yep.
Hopefully a safety makes a play or something. Run quarters. Run quarters. Just every play. Hopefully. Just put a lid on it. All right. Predictions. Like I said before, Rams are 6-point favorites at home in LA.
Rams win and big cover, I think.
I'm going Rams win and also cover. I do think their offense is be able to score some points and find some ways. I think the Rams adjust over the game. I got to look at Chris Shula's kind of like post opening script, like splits too. That's always a fun thing to look at. I feel like he's pretty good at it because it feels like their defense always finds something as the game goes along. But yes, I'm with you. Rams win and cover at home. They're just a really good team. All right. Next one up, an AFC NFC battle, a fun one. This is the rematch of the 1998 Super Bowl, John Elway's final game. We have the Packers at the Broncos. The Broncos are 2.5-point underdogs at Mile High. And when we're going to start with when the Packers have the ball, because this is our Haas fight of the week. Yes. Haas fight of the week, Packers offense going against the Broncos defense that, of course, is like, I mean, full steam ahead trying to set the sack record this year. And the Packers' O line is playing a little bit better, but really the Haas, I think, of this offense is Jordan Love. That's the Haas in my mind. But yes, this run game a little bit as well. But Packers offense, Broncos defense, what do you got for me, Chuck? This is, should be a very fun game.
I'm interested to see, like, I guess what Denver's plan is for trying to slow down, like, how explosive this passing game has been for the Packers this year. I mean, we've seen games this year where, I guess what I should say is, like, we've seen games this year where the passing volume is low and the Packers still score a whole lot of punch points because, or they're at least making the most out of their drives because they just get so much out of every single one of these passing attempts. And if there's any team that's like, if there's anything that's positioned to slow it down, it's probably this one because the Packers, like they've done a really good job, I think, of like finding roles for everyone and getting like some legitimately improved performances out of guys like Christian Watson this season as it's gone along. But I don't know if they're up to like you still got to get past Patrick Surtain in this game. Maybe Riley Moss is pickable. Like if you can force him to get some more DPIs, even though I swear he's really not that bad. It'll be hard to have a pass defense this good if multiple cornerbacks were just like bad, like people suggest. Right. It's a tough like matchup from a personnel standpoint. I wonder if you see like a heavy dose of Josh Jacobs in this game. Like if maybe you just say, okay, well we feel like we have a running back that can kind of take on anything and carry the load for us. Do we use him to kind of just keep that defense at bay? Because you know, like Vance Joseph is going to bring it. And those defensive backs are going to play really tight coverage on the back end. And that's been tough for most teams. I mean, look at some of the talent they've collected back there. You have the best cornerback in the league, someone who's going to be a Hall of Famer, someone who's somehow better than his dad was, a lot better than his dad was, who was also a really good player. And that just seems like that could be maybe where this muddies up. But at the same time, man, like it's just hard to discount what Jordan Love has done this year. Like even... Like no matter really, it feels like no matter which way you cut, like the stats and filter through, he's just kind of had an answer for everything. So I think I look at this for like a couple hours yesterday. I was like, damn, like I can't really pick who has an edge here because on one hand, like I do think that Denver has a space to be more talented, but it's not like the Packers are untalented. And when you have the ball, you can dictate the flow of the action. So I kind of came out with this just being a stalemate, like where you end up just looking at a bunch of drives and, you know, just great plays being made by great players all over the field. And at the end of the day, maybe you just need someone to kind of win these one-on-one matchups that you're going to have with their DBs, which is a really, really tough, tall task. But you got the quarterback to get it done. So maybe you just try to hold it for those big spots where, they just have a chance to conversing these big plays are going to get them through because I think this is just going to be like a players versus players matchup when it gets down to the end of it.
Yeah, it's how the Broncos like to play where they know they have good DBs. So they're going to go, okay, we'll ISO you up. We'll rush five and we'll win up front. We'll slant a lot of guys. We'll green dog, which is when a defender adds on to a guy that has to block. The thing is too, which is interesting, I have two kind of threads I pulled out in this one. One is Jordan Love against the blitz and also with the types of runs that the Packers get to. But I think, too, is that the Packers, and why I've always just like LaFleur and what they do and their coaching staff, is protection wise, they're really good at getting all five pass catchers out. Even when they only block, when they block with six, so like including the running back, they're really good with the rules of making just the O line is blocking and we can get the running back out on a release, which is good against this Broncos defense that at all times wants to keep you, they want to occupy as many blockers as possible, because then they can play tight coverage and you don't have as many bodies out, make the quarterback hold the ball. Boom. That's how Nick Benito gets home. That's how Zach Allen gets home. It's a lot of chaos, but they want you to hold onto the ball into the chaos. If you make quick decisions, you can get them. And I looked at two things. So like against the blitz, Jordan Love has been incredible against the blitz. First knee paper drop back. The Packers this year, 0.39 EPA per drop back against the blitz this year. So it's just an absolutely absurd number. Fourth in net yards per attempt, second in sack rate, which I think is important to say, fifth in explosive pass rate, and hasn't thrown a lot of picks. But what's curious to me, and I think some of this too is why charting and why each all blitzes aren't made the same and all coverage data points aren't made the same, because you have to see how they get to those places. The Broncos are fifth overall in blitz rate. They're second on early down blitz rate, but they're 21st. On late down blitz rate. And it's because that how they play early downs, they'll put five across and then they'll, you know, have an add-on blitzer. So it's kind of blitzing sometimes, but kind of just their coverage assignment. It's not like a full-on Spags or Brian Flores or Todd Bowles, which are, I think, more true blitzing. It's more just how the circumstances of what the offense does. And I looked at Jordan Love on early down blitzes. He's more just like, okay, 13th in success rate, 13th in EPA per dropback, 22nd in explosive passes. So it's more just dink and dunk against early down blitzes. I just thought that was interesting because I was picturing more, oh, they run play action, you're going to blitz him and he's going to launch it. But it's really more late downs he launches it, which makes sense. Yeah. You think of some of the big plays that he's had recently, the last couple of years, against the Vikings a few years ago, just last week, where or like against the Bears, where they're blitzing him on third and fourth down, he's just shredding cover zero. Like, you don't want to do that. But the Broncos kind of don't, they will, but not totally. It's just kind of different. And they run a lot of funky stuff when they do blitz on third and fourth down, but the Packers are good at picking that up. So what I'm kind of getting to is kind of first and second down blitzing. I think it'll be interesting. And the other thing, too, is I looked the Broncos run defense. They're great against duo runs. They're great against zone runs. A little interesting to me is plays with pullers on them. They're just like, they're okay. And if you remember the Packers, they like to do all the little like spin series where they have all the motions and split backs and everything, and they'll run counter off of that. So I was just curious. They face the third most pullers this season. So I think the run game could be more boom bust for the Packers than it typically is, where it's more of a jab. I think Josh Jacobs is a little banged up, so we'll see. But the other thing too, tying into all that, is they love doing all those motions and split back stuff with Jaden Reed, who's back from injury. And he's a slot only guy. And last year, the Packers had more runs, first down runs off receiver runs than anybody in the NFL. It wasn't even close. Mostly Jaden Reed stuff, some Bo Mountains runs in there. Broncos are good against those receiver runs. But against slot passes, again, more middle of the pack. They're 21st in EPA per play against targets in the slot. Think that's interesting. 15th in explosive pass rate, 16th in yards per attempt, 7th in passing success rate, but you can kind of, it's kind of boom busty. And when they're in zone, sorry, I pulled out this thread. Jaden Reed's very important in this game. When the Broncos are in zone, that's where they get shredded. So that's like Jaden Reed on early downs is kind of what I'm getting at, is they're 30th in EPA per pass against slot targets when they're in zone, which matters because they're in zone a little bit. So that is interesting to me because that's when they do have the pressure stuff and you can kind of get them inside out and you can get that high air yards per attempt. So I think it might be a big Jaden Reed game because outside targets, they're, I mean, that's where Pat Surtain lives. And they did move Surtain around last week against the Raiders to cover Bowers. So they had him moving, traveling with Bowers a little bit. Curious if they do that in this game. You know, if it's Dobbs, if it's Watson, but they're second in explosive pass rate, around fourth in success rate against outside targets. That makes a lot of sense. So long story short, look for a lot of motion and Jaden Reed and Jaden Reed targets. I think this is going to be a big Jaden Reed game for the Packers.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. And I think like, I guess seeing like how these teams adjust to each other as the game goes along will be pretty interesting, because I found something that was a little shocking to me. So, and this is something that I pulled out a lot this year, mostly because of JJ McCarthy and just trying to show people like, no, man, like when you pull out the scripted drives, like what he's doing is like historically bad. Like, there's really never been anyone this bad until the Cleveland Browns over there, you know, maybe the past month or so. I don't know what happened there. I can't even help myself anymore. I really can't help myself. If I told you that the Packers, once you get out of the first two drives of the game, Packers basically have the worst defense in the NFL this year. Once you get out of the first two drives of the game, they are 30th in first down per drives, 29th in drives that don't get a first down. They are, 32nd in positive EPA play per drive, almost three plays per drive, over three plays per drive that are generating positive EPA.
Packers offense, you said?
Packers defense. Packers defense.
Oh, wait, did we flip sides? Okay. Let's start this Broncos offense, Packers defense. Let's go to the other side of the ball. No, this works. That's perfect.
Yeah. Well, so we'll just move to the side of the ball. Right. Their defense has been really bad this year. Once you get out of the first two drives of the game, like their first two drives, they're like dominant. Number one across the board, just about every single stat you're looking at. But once you get out, like they get shredded basically. Like they even drop from like first to 21st success rate at the bottom five in EPA per play. They do, you know, hold teams to explosive play rate, but down to down, they've been really, really bad once the game kind of gets going. On the flip side, Broncos offense has been really good this year once the game gets going. They seem to waste the start of the game. First two drives, they're averaging about 25 yards per drive, but once they get out of it and Sean Payton has to react to what the defense is doing, they're about the top 7-8 offense when you pull out the first two drives of the game. So is this a situation where Sean Halfley, or you know, Sean Payton, for lack of a better term, like sons Jeff Halfley, and says no, what you've been doing this year is cool.
This is how it goes in the NFL. This is how it goes for the past 20 years, bro.
Watch me call this offense with this, you know, this mid quarterback. Watch what I'm going to figure out how to do against you, because I think that while Sean he will tell reporters that Bo Nix is the greatest thing that he's ever seen in his life in the next Drew Brees. When you watch him call plays, he clearly does not think that of Bo Nix. But I do think he's done a good job of mitigating some of the disaster impacts that Bo Nix can have on an offense. So I think it was interesting to see like that support and see them jump to like top eight. When you get out the first two drives of the game, about the worst thing you've ever seen to start these games, which also does feel about right, because it takes them a little bit to get going. And then think about the Packers. We've seen them as you know, good as his defense has been this year. We've seen them, like, especially recently, give teams a chance to get back in the game, like that game against the Lions on Thanksgiving. Ultimately, you iced it because Jordan Love went crazy in the fourth quarter. Yeah. But
they almost lost to the Cardinals until Micah Parsons blacked out.
The Bears game last week. The Giants game. They let teams get back into the game. And Sean Payton is really good. One of the best play callers in the league still. Right. Yeah. So maybe this is the poison pill for Green Bay in the playoffs. They just don't adjust well.
That's a great point. Especially who you're playing in the NFC. Sean McVay?
Yeah.
you got to think some of these offenses in the NFC. Like, no, that's a great set. That's how it feels, because I'm like, all their stats, they're like a top eight defense, everything. And I'm like, I think they're good, but oh well. And that's not, it's just one of those things, right? I think they're pretty good, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like they're gettable. And also it's kind of weird because Micah Parsons usually takes over in the second half. So like that, you just said, you got to think when he took over against the Lions, it was in the red zone he took over. That means the Lions were moving the ball. That's a really, really good stat. And Sean Payton's stat makes total sense. He's unbelievable. Sean Payton's good. I liked in this one was that it was because the Packers love run so much zone coverage and they're pretty good at it. They run a lot of two invert. They mix it up a little bit. They like to invert their guys and everything, but they run zone coverages at the seventh highest rate in the NFL. They do a lot of creepers and simulated pressures, which I think can spook Bo Nix a little bit. That's when you kind of get him to turn the shoulders and do the no scope check down swings to the side where he doesn't even look. And so against zone coverages this year, Nix is 24th in passing success rate, 14th in EPA per dropback, 28th in explosive pass rate. And that's why the EPA per dropback with him is more of a, I think, a Peyton stat, because he's good on third game planning in the red zone and third down. And he gets him some nice play calls there. 27th in net yards per attempt, 30th. In 20th in explosive pass, 14th in EPA per dropback, got all that. So to me, I look at it, especially against zone, Knicks will kind of, if he doesn't like the first read, it's kind of the half scramble, turn into a check down, or he runs a little bit. The Packers are the best tackling team in the NFL. I will give them that. They have their first and missed tackle rate, 8.7%. Only three teams are below 10%. They're second in group tackles. I brought this out before, but it matters in this game. They're second in group tackles, second in first tackle opportunity conversion rate. This is all from Next Gen Stats. Knicks likes to throw those underneath routes. You know, it's kind of boom bust. It's down the field or underneath. All right, so they tackle really well. Those might not leak into good place because they tackle so well, and it's going to be a lot of tight coverage around it. So I think, again, it's an interesting kind of strength on or tendency versus strength type of thing. The Packers against on throws of 5 air yards or fewer, the third in explosive pass rate allowed and 8th in success rate. So I think it's going to be a lot of, you know, pound on the rock, make it third manageable. I think you can run on the Packers a little bit, make it third manageable. Don't let Micah Parsons pin his ears back and then just get rid of the ball. And just, you know, just make everything third and threes, third and fours, third and twos. And just so we don't have those checkdowns can turn into okay plays as opposed to tackle. Oh my God, second and nine. Oh my God, it's stopped short of the sticks again. So kind of one of those things where the Packers do have a little strength there against what the Broncos like to do the most. But I love your adjustment stat. I think that was such a good one.
Yeah, but still got Micah Parsons, though. Because like you said, in that Lions game, they got down to the 5-yard line, and what happened? They got nuked.
That's why he's the closer. Hey, you have a bad defense behind it. If you have, you got Marion Rivera throwing straight.
Look at Dallas. They did have a bad defense behind Micah Parsons. They had a really bad one.
Yes.
The Green Bay playoff game.
Look at that. Oh my God, yeah. That game was burned into my brain.
Yeah,
because I mean, look, the Packers just do whatever they want.
And what's happening? Disgrace.
I also meant to bring this up. Riley Moss has started the practice with boxing gloves to limit his pass interference calls. I thought you would like that.
You had too much, little pal.
My dad with rookies, or like a lot of young offensive linemen, he would tie wrists together,
take the wrists together,
wrists, so they can't spread. It would be so funny. He'd be like, you just see him in practice like day 4. All right, time to bring the bands out. And then you just see all the younger. just trying to block it. It would just be so funny.
We used to do that too. Yeah, in high school, every day we'd get for training camp. We'd get out to practice, tape our hands together. Yeah.
Hey, it works. Keep those hands tight. It makes sense. Like when you bench press, where are your hands? Tight. Yeah. That's why you bench press like this. You don't bench press out here. Bench press
Everyone on the line play college football, so we're doing something right.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, let's predict this game. Broncos, 2.5-point underdogs at Mile High.
I don't know. I kind of like the Broncos to get this done. I definitely like the Broncos to cover this one. Oh man.
I know.
I'm gonna go Broncos. I hate to say it, but Sean Payton's good. I mean, he just tortured me so much as a Falcons fan, but there's a reason why. There's a reason why I hate him. It's not for anything I know about him, because I don't know that much about him. He seemed to be really good at his job. It was frustrating. It's just weird because there's so many individual forces that can tip the force again. Jordan Love, Micah Parsons, PS2, really strong, all pro caliber players. I think the Broncos, they might just be a little bit better composition to kind of beat up the Packers' offense than maybe the other way around.
This also might be the best 4-play caller battle you'll see, too, between two OC or 2 offense play callers and 2 defense play callers. It's a pretty good one, too. I would say maybe, if you get a Seahawks or Rams game in there, too. But you got 4 really good play callers. Vance Joseph, Sean Payton, Halfley, and LaFleur. They're all damn good at their jobs. I'll go Packers just to make it fun. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be so close. I think this is going to be a slug fight and come down to those 3, 4, 5 explosive plays. This is going to be an interesting battle. So really fun one. I think the Packers, I think both of these teams, because the AFC is wide open, both of these teams are contenders to me. But I think this is going to be just such a good match. And God, now I'm going back and forth. I'll go Packers. Just make it fun.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. We'll get a wager or something like that. All right. We'll take our last break and then we're going to come back with the slop watch and some Hail Marys. See you guys in a sec. All right. We are back. It's time for the slop watch.
Warning. This is a slop watch.
Yeah. We got some slime right there. Slop watch. Games that stink on paper, but you know, worth one of your quad boxes on your multi view when you're watching Sunday ticket before we start these Saturday games. All right, Colts at Seahawks. The Seahawks are almost 2 touchdown favorites, minus 13.5.
It's too low.
Why?
It's too low.
Because they're either starting Riley Leonard or 44-year-old Philip Rivers.
44 this week. Yeah.
44-year-old Philip Rivers, who might as well be called Philip Lakes with how he looked at his press conference.
Boy.
He was looking a little, he was eating good. I love Philip Rivers. I love him so much, so I'm excited to see him again.
Someone basically asked him, like, someone paraphrasing here. Someone asked him, like, you've been eating good, Phil. And he was like, yeah, but I wasn't running from anyone anyway, so not a big difference. I was like, okay. Like, you can say that. You can say that, but there's a difference between like being an immobile quarterback that's playing quarterback year round and being retired for 5 seasons.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Because honestly, it kind of shocked me, like, how the pandemic kind of warped, I think, people's sense of time. But the last season he played was 2020. That's 5 seasons ago, man. And how can you possibly be so bored that you would get up off your couch and say, you know what? I haven't played football in 5 years, but it sounds like a lot of fun is going to Seattle and get absolutely bombed on by the best defense.
Let's make a playoff push.
Yeah, for a playoff push. And that's the crazy part for the Colts. Like, dog, just accept it's over. It's over. And the idea that you would do this to Rivers and play that competitive nature off of him and put him in this spot is ridiculous. Right. I mean, you're 8-5. And the reality of the situation is, if they didn't trade for Sauce Gardner, they probably don't make this call because you're in the same boat as kind of like the Falcons, where you're like, well, what am I playing for, man? If I'm not playing to make the playoffs, I don't have a first round pick. Like, what is this for? Sometimes it's just for nothing, man. And that's that. Like, you went for it, you didn't get it, and you have nothing to show for it. And that's just the reality of it. But it doesn't mean you go call grandpa and put him in harm's way like this. But today he was the first one throwing the ball for the Colts, like in their drills. He's probably starting on Sunday. And I understand, like, the one thing I will give Rivers is people say, like, how could he know the plays? Well, I mean, it's all the same tree. Like, this is the same coaching tree that he was a part of.
This was his QB coach in San Diego for like a decade.
Yeah. Like, the funny part about, like, all these Colts hirings is, like, and how it shifted is, like, the Colts and Eagles, like, they still haven't moved off of the Doug Peterson, Andy Reid tree at all. It's like, they're still like, like, getting their descendants from there. So I'm sure he knows the plays. Like, that'll be fine. But can he throw a ball? Can he move? I know he can't move. So, like, if you're the Seahawks, and I say this as, like, a former defender, but I feel like if you played football or even watched the sport, you know, you cannot be the defense that's get beat up by a 44-year-old man who just got off his couch after 5 years of coaching high school football.
You cannot let
that happen to you. They are going to hit him so hard on Sunday.
They are.
They're going to tee off on him. Why are you doing this, bro? Mm-hmm. You are putting a big target on your chest and saying, I think this is a big old joke. And you know who doesn't think this is a joke? Guys who are trying to win the Super Bowl. They're going to kill you, Philip. This is crazy.
Right. I'm holding out hope because he's still on practice squad, technically. They promoted Brett Rypien and Leonard did practice. So I'm holding out hope that this is just some weird smoke screen that the Colts can only do. This is the same team that signed Jeff Saturday as an interim coach. You know, some weird thing. And the offensive, like, how not knowing the plays, like, Rivers won, one of the smartest football players in our lifetimes. Also, he was in San Diego for years and years and years, mostly, not mostly, but a good chunk under North Turner. and then also other coaches. But that offensive system, it's all the same terminology and stuff. It's the same. It's the back of his hand. Like, this is nothing. It's just like, oh, okay, yeah, okay. Oh, you maybe called that a little bit different. That's all it is for him. And especially they probably just wristbanded anyway. So like him, it's just getting a picture. Like, that is the least of my worries and concerns about it. Like, I can call offensive systems I haven't been in 10 years. I think too is that, so I'm just hoping that it's just some weird smoke screen where it's like a player coach, because him and Leonard know each other, you know, because they're both Alabama guys or something of that sort. That's like what I'm, again, this is what I'm saying, what I'm hoping. But I'm seeing all these reports and all these people talking, and you can see like national reporters like giddy, like, he's going to play. And I'm like, no, don't open the door. Don't turn around.
This is so unsafe, bro. And honestly, against the Riley Leonard stuff, I don't know, because you've got Schefter saying he's week to week. You've got Rapsheet saying he's going to play this weekend. I'm like, maybe that's like where the smoke screen is, but can we be real here? You don't need to play smokescreen games about Riley Leonard. Just throw him out there. Like, Seattle's not changing anything that they're going to do because of him. No. So why are you wasting your time with this if that's your strategy? So maybe it's not the strategy. Right. Maybe he's just actually playing, which is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Phillip, you're going to die. You're going to die out there.
And he right now, he's okay because he doesn't. The other thing, too, is the Hall of Fame thing, which is crazy to me, that if he plays, he resets that 5 years. If he's on practice squad, it's fine. That's another little part of me that's going like, that's why it's like, is this a smokescreen? Because it's like, that's the difference. If he's active, okay, we'll find out on Sunday, obviously, or this weekend. But I don't know. Like, another thing, too, I know Leonard, they say, is week to week. His, like, how he played against the Jags wasn't bad. I actually thought it was, I know the Seahawks defense is way different than the Jags defense, but at least he can run around a little bit and do stuff, maybe because he is banged up. That's why they don't want him to do it, but I don't know. It's one of those circumstances. I didn't think I'd be talking about Phillip Rivers in the year 2025. It was fun to retweet a whole bunch of clips from 5 years ago, though, and him like hooting and hollering while he's mic'd up and stuff. Like, that's fun. I love Phillip Rivers. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks ever. But not like this. Not like this. It's like the Matrix. Not like this.
Two of the last four games against Seattle and Houston. Like, Phil, you watched that game. You saw what they did to Mahomes. Right. You said, I want some of that. Come on now, this is ridiculous. Please just make what I always tell people is, it's never too late to do something that you haven't, like, you can pull off any plan that you haven't started yet. Like, you can't say it's too late to not do this. The game hasn't happened yet. Up until 1 p.m., Phillip Rivers, up until 1 p.m. Sunday, whenever that game kicks off, you can still pull out of this and no one will blame you. And if they do, then we'll talk some sense into them, because they're crazier than you are.
There's no going back with this. They're like, oh, we talk every day about the game. I know Steichen and Rivers are really close, but it's one of these things where it's like talking about ball is one thing, but like just even practicing, like getting your arm into game shape. And I know he coaches and all that, but still it's different. Like, the guys that start throw hundreds of balls a day. So it's like just even stuff like that, where it's like just getting into that kind of game. I don't know. It's on top of the movement shape. It's not like Randall Cunningham sat out a year. It's Randall Cunningham at 36. That's like my reference point for this, the 1998-97 Vikings. He sat out a year. It's Randall Cunningham, one of the best athletes that's ever played quarterback. So he's going to age more gracefully than Phillip Rivers, who was a good athlete. Don't get me wrong. All these guys are good athletes, but he's 44. And I pulled up the clip from 5 years ago. He had one scramble the entire season for 3 yards. The entire year. And it 3 yards took about 3 minutes to get there. So, and that was 5 years ago.
Yeah. Devin Witherspoon is going to run through his chest. It's going to be over. They're going to blitz Devin Witherspoon off the edge. He's going to run right through his chest in the beginning.
He's got a lot of padding, though. At least, you know, like I do. He's got a nice little, nice little padding for him. He's got a natural flak jacket, as we like to call it. You think the Seahawks cover?
Yeah. two touchdowns? Make it 30.5. I don't care. Yeah. They're not scoring touchdowns.
If Leonard starts, it would be actually a little bit more interesting, but I'm like scared if Rivers starts. Like, I'm not even morbidly curious. I'm morbid that if he has to play. If Leonard plays, then I'm a little more morbidly curious. But yeah, I think this, like, it's weird. I love Rivers. Like, he could check the ball down and throw some corner routes, but again, just moving against a defense that's nuts. That's just so scary to me. All right, we'll go on to the other slop watch game. This one isn't totally sloppy, but I just wanted to talk about it and find a way. And this is Dolphins at Steelers. I mean, Steelers are in the driver's seat of the AFC North. And the Dolphins, though, you know, playing some good ball. They're playing some good ball. And I just wanted to mention them here. That was really just the only reason I want to say, like, talk about the swap watch. The run game's cool. Achane's got a rib, so we'll see. Patrick Paul, their left tackle, is good. And I want to do a cut up and a breakdown of him soon, but he is good. That was a hit for them. The right side of the offense line's iffy. Aaron Brewer is playing like an all pro. Love his game. So the offense line's okay. They're doing some cool stuff with the tight ends. I'm still partial to Julian Hill, but Greg Dulcich, Darren Waller. The offense is really fun right now. And going against the Steelers defense that really needs it. And I got some Jalen Ramsey stats I can bring up in 1 second. But anything for this game, this matchup that's technically a swap watch, but it's more Monday Night Football. Yeah, you can check this one out.
Yeah, I think this game is funny just from the standpoint of it's like if you have ADHD, like the Dolphins are the team that you should be watching because it's all or nothing. Yeah. Like it's all or nothing. They have, I think like, I forgot to write down, but like over the past 7 weeks, they have the most explosive runs. They have the most negative runs on offense, which is, you know, perfect.
Our friend Cephas described it as their offense is a Rube Goldberg machine.
Yes.
Perfect.
And then if you're someone,
best description of the Dolphins offense ever.
And on the flip side, like if you're someone who's trying to get your child to sit still, that Steelers offense, that can be the antidote sometimes. Because, you know, even in their good games, it's like, oof, boy, this is a slog. Like they're churning. Is. The oil's definitely the oil change, but you look up and hey, they put together a nice game somehow. And that's just like the Arthur Smith experience, 20 points. I guess. Yeah, last week was 27. It felt the exact same, but it's just chugging along.
Do you remember? I don't know, like how your NBA history books are, but like the '90s, like the Miami Heat and Knicks would play, and it would be like 68 to 65.
Oh yeah,
Pat Riley's teams are just the Steelers. They're the 1990s Miami Heat.
Football for men, you know, from a better time,
I watched their game and I'm breaking it down, and they had a play out there where it was Adam Thielen, Skarsgård, Ben Skoranek, a jumbo offensive lineman, and then Darnell Washington as well. So they have two block first receivers, a six offensive lineman, Darnell Washington, who's essentially another offensive lineman. It's like this offense has zero threat of launching the ball. They're just going to live and die off 5 yard gains, throwing or rushing. That's just how this team's going to work. The Steelers, though, I had a stat because I'm writing about this right now. Since they moved Jalen Ramsey to safety in week 9, and this is something I've always wanted. Ramsey played a little safety in college. I've been so keen on seeing him transition to safety in the NFL because I think he can go on the Charles Woodson path where he's basically an all pro corner, all pro safety, and Rod Woodson, speaking of which. But Steelers defense since week 9, this is when he moved to deep safety. They're 6th in EPA per pass allowed, 6th in passing success rate allowed, middle of the pack, 14th in explosive pass rate allowed. Weeks 1 through 8 before he moved to safety, they're 24th. In EPA per pass allowed. So they went from 24th to 6th. They're 25th in passing success rate allowed. So they went from 25th to 6th. So they went from bottom 8 to top 6 in terms, and they were 27th in explosive passes allowed. And I just think he's doing some cool stuff right there. He's truly an eraser as a tackler, as far as like being a safety and taking down the run game. I think he just has solidified them a little bit. And JPJ is, of course, a pretty solid corner. But I did notice that like you can really feel the little difference in their pass coverage with him back there. Maybe just kind of a stabilizing force. He's just such a good tackler, and he's so freaking big. One of those things I kind of underrate how big he is, just 6'2", 215 at safety, and he can run, steps a little step slower, but he can run and he can tackle. So I just had to bring that up with the Steelers with their, Brazilian jiu-jitsu offense and Jalen Ramsey at safety now.
Yeah.
Predictions.
One more. Just a quick toss out. I don't think there's been a bigger turnaround this season than the Dolphins defense. I mean, first, like month and a half of the season, basically 31st, 32nd, and just about every single stat, and that's not a joke, like 32nd yards per drive, points per drive, first downs per drive, percentage drives out of the first down, EPA per play, like 32 for all of them. And then since week 7, they've basically been a top 5 defense, which is now like that's more weeks being good than you were bad. If they can just do it for a whole season. Because last year they started good and then they were bad. This year they started bad and now they're good. Weaver, you just put together one full season.
they started bad, got really good, and then ended bad.
Yeah. It's like, hey, man, if you just put together that one season, clearly you're capable of it. Yeah. You're going to get that head coaching job, man. Like, they're close. Like, I fully understand why everyone's coming back next year, except for Chris Greer. Because I think that's the best way to go about this. Everyone except Greer can come back.
I do too. I've said if Mike McDaniel got fired, he would be the highest paid coordinator in NFL history. Because I just think what he does is just so, so good. And some of the young guys are playing well. I like the Hill guy. I like Washington a little bit too, Malik Washington. I like Patrick Paul. They're playing hard. That's some to it. First month of the season, they were waving a white flag. And the fact that they're playing hard and winning and being in the good process and everything, like, you know, tip of the cap. I shared the stat with Matt the other day, but I got to share it with you. Since 2013, there's been 452 QB seasons. Aaron Rodgers ranks second to last, so 451st in average air yards to the sticks, -3.2, only behind Alex Smith, or ahead, I should say, of Alex Smith in 2020 with the Commanders. This is a check down Charlie offense. It's DK Metcalf, go balls and check downs. So we'll see how this goes against the Dolphins defense. But predictions, Steelers are 3.5-point favorites at home. Also,
I don't know the Dolphins. I don't know. No reason why. Just.
I have no.
It's fun.
Okay, I'll go the Dolphins too. Let's just have fun with it. I'll go the Dolphins too. Yeah, I think that at the very least Dolphins cover. I think they cover. I think they can get some big plays against this defense. All right, we'll end the show now with some Hail Marys. Hail Marys, this is where we throw up a prayer of prediction, and these have been prayers so far this year. I have two, Chuck has one. Last week, I predicted Tyler Shuck would have two interceptions against the Bucs. He had one, and then the Bucs dropped a second one late in the fourth quarter. I think I reacted the same way the Bucs defenders did, and that you had the Chiefs would have a 50-yard pass play under pressure, and you came so close.
Dude, they had one. There was a 35-yard one.
I was yelling.
So close.
I know. And then a couple other just misses too. But Chuck, what's your Hail Mary this week?
I pulled back from the specificity, just try to get back on the board again. So my Hail Mary this week is a 200-yard rushing game for the Bills to go with a win over the Patriots.
That's a good one. I like that one. I know. I like the rushing stat ones, even though I haven't hit any. All right. I went with one. I also had a Chiefs one. The Chiefs played the Chargers. We didn't get to that one in the slop watch. It's kind of like, but still, very interesting game because the Chiefs are playing for their lives. I went the Chiefs are going to win by double digits against the Chargers.
I can't quit them until they're fully eliminated. I can't do it.
Again, the two rewatch teams every time. The Packers and the Chiefs, every time I rewatch them during the week, I'm like, you're so much better than I thought you were on Sunday. And it's just, the Packers win, at least. The Chiefs have like a 1 in 10 shot of making the playoffs. I think it's like 1 in 5 shot of making the playoffs.
Dude, I'm going to lose my mind after this season when people are like, what's wrong with Mahomes? Nothing, man. Nothing. Like that. Even the Texans game, like you go back and watch that film. Criminal what his teammates did to him, because even under the dress he was, if they just caught some passes, they could have been in that game. And we talked about it last week, the Tyquan Thornton drop, rewatching that on film, oh my God, be strong.
Yep.
Great play by Kamari last week to dive and break that up. But bro, like Devontae Adams is catching that.
Catch and turn. Yes. Catch and rip. Catch and turn. That's the classic. That's the coaching point. I know. You can't just catch and fall. I know. I can't quit them either. Again, I don't think I think the defense is actually okay, but they have some real strengths. Like certain matchups are good for them and bad, just like everyone else in the AFC. But the offense is still good, man. I know it's not the prettiest thing, and they had two offensive linemen out. It's still pretty good offense, but Mahomes is still up. Unbelievable. Rewatching them, I'm like, God, you're just so good. There's some plays that he makes that are just unbelievable. But yeah, I can't quit him either. So double digit win against the Chiefs. I just don't trust that, or against the Chargers. I don't trust that Chargers offensive line at all. And I think they can run on them a little bit. So I think it's a good game script for him. But we're closing it out today, Chuck. That was a fun one. Week 15 is going to be a fun one. We'll be back Sunday to recap all the action from Sunday after the late afternoon games wrap up before Sunday night football. So come hang out. We do it on YouTube. It's a good time. A bunch of you guys are in there and really appreciate it. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That's Charles McDonald. You can find him at 4verts on social media. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us, rate us, leave us some comments and reviews. We appreciate that as well. I see you guys always saying that in the episodes on Spotify. Also watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. You can check out that live Sunday show, plus a bunch of other great content that we have on there. All these shows are on there and clips and other good stuff. Thanks to Stone, Austin, Madison behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy your weekend. See you guys next time.